Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and Carl Carlson's joined me today. Hey, Carl.
Hey, Fred.
Hey, you know, Carl, last night, and this will be temporal shifting here, but last night, when we're recording this, I was doing a presentation to a group of entrepreneurs and small business owners and people that were associated and invited by a company that does rapid prototyping. So it wasn't necessarily reliability people, but the event was billed as discussions about reliability and product reliability. And one of the questions I got was, how do I know what to work on? You know, it's how do I got a brand new product. It's, you know, we're trying to figure out what the right solution is for a problem our customers have identified, and we're developing a new product and stuff, and we're making prototypes. That's why we work with this company that invited us. But what's important to focus on for reliability? And it made me think of the series that the book you wrote about FMEA, which I should have plugged last night, so I apologize for that. but it's sometimes as simple as just asking, well, what's going to fail, right? And one guy described that as, well, that's a poor man's FMEA. And I says, well, that's, you know, if you know that there's lots of ways something can fail, well, then an FMEA is a way to organize that. But it came down to is they weren't really familiar with a lot of the reliability tools in lots of activities and stuff. And so it was a quick tutorial on it. And one of the things I'm happy about is that, you know, you're now adding all these articles to the Ascendo reliability site on FMEA. And so I thought, you know, go to Ascendo, look for the effective FMEAs list, and get the basics of what is FMEA, and then chime in and ask questions. Carl's got this, he's got this routine where you send in questions and he'll respond to them, he'll answer them, right? And previous questions are being incorporated into the articles that come out every couple of weeks. There's how-tos, there's all this good stuff. So I'm excited that those articles are up online now. But, you know, am I on the right track? My advice to this guy is like, you know, you got a brand new product. You're exploring what to work on to make it better. FMEA just seemed like a natural fit to me. And I might be too close to these tools to know was the right choice or not.
Sure, sure. No, you're definitely on the right track. First of all, I want to say I'm very excited to begin these articles, and hopefully they start coming out in July on Ascendo. I think I'll be doing one per week, but I've been organizing the topic into chunks of information that I think will interest both the new person and the experienced practitioner as well, and provide them something of value. And yes, you're absolutely right. When talking with folks that are developing new products, that FMEA is a useful tool and can be a very important tool, but we don't always do FMEAs on everything. And so the topic that comes up is, when do you use FMEA, and what are the criteria that help select FMEA projects? Mm-hmm. For example, going back to my automotive experience, there are well over 10,000 parts in an automobile.
I've heard it described as 10,000 parts loosely affiliated driving down the road.
Yes. and so we're doing 10,000 FMEAs on every new vehicle program doesn't necessarily add value, and I would say it does not. I mean, FMEAs take time. They involve the participation of subject matter experts. If you try to apply them on everything, you end up watering down the effectiveness. And it's a tool that's a team-based tool and is best done when certain criteria are met that help select the projects. So I put a lot of thought. I mean, I've had experience in this. I mean, I've supervised or performed over 2,000 FMEAs, and I've put a lot of thought into what are the criteria to select FMEA projects. And over the years, it's worked really, really well.
I'm just thinking is that one of the complaints I've heard from people when I even recommend that they consider doing FMEA, and when I think they're in a good shape. So I'm curious of what the criteria is to see how well that maps against what I do when I think of it. But one of the pushbacks I get is, we already know this stuff. Or it takes so long and we only discuss what we already know about. And like, some of it's how the FMEA was implemented and some different procedures and facilitators make it just a drudgery to do.
Yeah.
So doing an FMEA when it has a compelling reason to do it, can overcome some of those hurdles that are kind of the stigma of badly done or poorly done FMEAs. But you're right. It's not something you do all the time. If you've got an existing product and you already have 10 things that you know you need to go fix, well, you don't need to reorganize those 10 things. You know you need to go fix those.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's so many things that can be done to resolve that problem that you're bringing up, which is so common. People, the fatigue syndrome of, oh, not another FMEA. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that can be done to solve that. I'll just mention three very quickly, and these can be topics for other, speaking of reliability. But the one of them is to begin with concerns. Always want, if we're doing an FMEA, and we'll go back to what makes for the selection criteria, mm-hmm. but let's say we've got risk that's been identified, and we're set about doing the FMEA with the right team. I always want to start with concerns. I usually take out a yellow sticky pad. Of course, nowadays they're orange and blue and what have you. Mm-hmm. But I hand out a yellow sticky pad to everybody, all the subject matter experts, and I say, please write down the things you're concerned about this project. Mm-hmm. It might end up as failure modes, it might end up as effects, it might end up as causes. But it usually brings about a flurry of activity. And then we put up those concerns on the wall and we make sure that the FMEA picks up those concerns as we go along. And a good facilitator will keep the meeting moving, and where nobody has concerns about something, if you've got the right team in the room and no one's concerned about something, I really don't want to spend time on it mm-hmm. in the FMEA. And so by staying focused on concerns of real people when you have the right team in the room, you keep the interest of the participants together. And so that's one way to speed up the FMEA and keep people interested and engaged. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Another way is the use of generic FMEAs. So you have a widget, and if the majority of the widget is the same year to year. Right. Now, that's not always true.
Right, right.
So you have certain technology that's changing every few months, and you can't do that. But a lot of systems have, at least the majority of the parts stay similar and they fail in the same way year to year. That's what I would call a generic FMEA. We want to have that on record so we know how things fail. We know how a ABS system or a brake system fails. We know what the effects and the causes are. And then when we come up with the new Corvette ABS next generation, we can build on, and maybe 70% of it is going to be generic that's pulled in. But the important thing is the other 30% that's new, where we've got new technology, and then how to integrate that newness into the system, because sometimes the integration is where the problems are.
That's right.
So use of generic FMEAs is a great tool mm-hmm, mm-hmm. to take care of the fatigue. And the third thing I'll mention, Fred, is pre-population. And that's a controversial topic. There are only certain portions of the FMEA that can be pre-populated. and I've written articles on this, and you have to do it very carefully. But you can take care of certain things, like you can pre-populate certain functional statements from technical specifications.
Right, right.
You can pre-populate certain failure modes from generic FMEAs or from field failures. But then you have to have the team review it and make sure that they buy in or modify so you get the team input. But that's another way to reduce that fatigue syndrome. But God, it's awful when someone starts with a blank sheet and then painfully enters every word, even on things that there are no risk or no concern about.
You hear the argument with, well, we need to do an FMEA because it's generically, we understand it's a good thing to do, without a context of why they want to do it or what benefit would come out of doing the activity. Now, the part that, let's get to when do you do it, because it's, I agree, it's not every time. And I think it's what makes FMEA have a bad stigma in some circles, because it's done inappropriately, not just in the facilitation, but it's done on things that don't matter, that there's no concern. I think that the idea of the concerns is, if you get a team together, I mean, I did one FMEA where it was on a socketed system that had an interposer level and all this stuff. It was a new attachment method. It had electrical and heat issues and all these areas that were of concern. It was bigger than anything else we'd done before. And the concerns were all there. But somebody said, you know, there's 1,000 pins that we're connecting from the circuit board to this ASIC, this massive ASIC. And there's the pad on the board, which we're not concerned about. There's a connector, a device that connects that to an interposer. That interposer connects to a substrate. The substrate connects to the IC. And there's a stack up of like 6 interconnects. Now, we're really concerned about that, but we have no idea how to measure it. and I said, well, there's, you know, is open shorts and intermittents. There's the failure modes. And they go, oh, yeah, that's what we're worried about. But we don't know where it is. So we spent the rest of the meeting, instead of doing an FMEA about open shorts and intermittents, which we all understood were the problem, it was on, well, how are we going to measure this? Is it in which set of these interconnects is the part that's causing the problems? And how will we know? I mean, it took us 5 minutes to do the FMEA, and then we spent 2 hours trying to figure out how to take the next step and actually do something about it.
Excellent. Great. Yeah, you're adding value.
So we try.
Yes. Let's talk about the scenario where a company has the capability of selecting and choosing FMEAs to do. Mm-hmm. And I want to start that way because some companies do not. Certain defense contractors or other...
It's contracted. Thou shalt do FMEA.
Yeah, if it's contracted, thou shalt, if you're mandated. That's a different topic. So I want to pick up the subject from, you have a choice to do FMEAs or not. Mm-hmm. How do you make that selection? So I start, if you could imagine a spreadsheet. So we're in we're doing a podcast, so I don't have a chalkboard in front of me.
Yeah. Well, we can add, some graphics or the spreadsheet itself.
I'll definitely put on some show notes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So imagine down the first column, we put the bill of materials. And if you're in manufacturing, you can put your process flow diagram. Mm-hmm. But I want to focus for this example on design and system FMEAs. And so we have the system hierarchy going down the left side.
Okay.
So you get the widget system and then subsystem A, component 1, 2, 3, subsystem B, component 4, 5, 6. And you lay it out that way. So then imagine across the top, we put risk criteria. And here's where I've got what I call typical risk criteria, but I always, always work with the company and let's tailor the risk criteria to what makes sense for your business. So for instance, degree of new technology is a risk criteria.
Okay.
Degree of field problems. And the reason I use the word degree is because we're going to put a variable, a 1, 2, 3, red, yellow, green, 1 to 5. We're going to state, if you're doing new technology, a 1, 2, 3. 1 is we don't have any new technology. 2 is a moderate amount. 3 is a high degree of new technology. Or you could imagine a scale of 1 to 5.
Okay. So, but this is kind of like a risk ranking of some sort. Is if yes. we have something new, I mean, that's kind of a red flag for a lot of teams. If it's new, we need to pay attention to it.
Yes.
That kind of thing. Okay.
And then another risk criteria would be field problems for similar items. So we don't always introduce brand new technology totally. You usually or often have yeah. sometimes.
Carl, you're not in Silicon Valley.
Yes, I realize.
So it's a different world out here.
yep. And so where there are field problems, well, even Tesla's in Silicon Valley.
That's right.
And Tesla has products that are fielded, and they have they're always pushing the envelope and have new products coming out. And so they'll have a certain number of field problems as well as new technology. There is also a regulatory risk that may or may not apply to certain subsystems. So remember, we're going to do this what I call preliminary risk assessment, subsystem by subsystem. Mm-hmm. So if you have it, if you're doing a bicycle, you'd have the frame, you'd have the sprocket, you'd have the seat, you'd have the handlebar, you'd have different sub-assemblies.
Right.
And for each of those, we're looking at the degree of new technology, the degree of field problems for similar. Then I also, we can talk about supplier concerns mm-hmm. as a risk factor, regulatory risk, which will vary. It'll be more on some subsystems than others, particularly safety. Safety is always a concern. So, but we want to do a variable risk assessment because possibly on the bicycle, the frame is not, you might have a lower risk than say a new disc brake system that you're putting in. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so where you've got some preliminary variability and safety. So we brainstorm those. I typically want to have 6 or 7 or 8 different risk criteria or 5, you know, some people use 4. So then it takes about an hour with the project team to go down each line and say, okay, 1, 2, 3 or 1 to 5, let's give it our best shot, preliminary risk. Then you can multiply them together. In other words, for the sprocket, you'd multiply the 1 times 2 times 1 times 3 times whatever, mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm. you get the total number. And what that does is it provides variability to the selection for the FMEA. So where you have new technology, high degree of concern about safety, and already have field problems, wow, we're for sure going to do an FMEA. Whereas you might have a particular subsystem that's not safety related, it has no new technology and has very little field problems, I'm probably not going to recommend an FMEA there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's up to the company, it's up to the project. So you look at the numbers and you say, okay, based on our timing, the importance of the program and this variability, we're going to select, 10 FMEAs or 5 or whatever mm-hmm. we decide. And that decision is also based on resources and timing and other project issues like that. But it provides a variable way to look at preliminary risk and help select FMEAs. So I've used that a lot, and it tends to work pretty well.
Yeah, the way I've approached it, and I'm going to change over to this one because it's a way to engage the different departments and the teams, and it's also a way to balance out where's the overall team see where the problems are, where we need to go focus on those. If the electrical engineering manager comes to you and says, we need to do an FMEA, we have some new suppliers and we need to do an FMEA, we may have missed the really urgent or important parts that we should have put the resources into. It might be the other way I've approached this is do a system level FMEA, just again with that same team. But it didn't, I think it's similar in that regard, we go across the different major subsystems and major functionalities and we look at it from that regard. But we get a saying, oh, we need to look at the handlebars. That's a new material. We have a lot of uncertainty there, all these parts, but it's not the same set of questions. I think what you're bringing out is tying it more to the business concerns and the customer concerns and the what do we know as engineers and not and don't know that we need to resolve. So I
agree with you. In fact, I almost always want to see a system FME when we have a new project going on. Mm-hmm. And because the system FMA will pick up the integration and interface issues, which are more than 50%, empirically, more than 50% of the problems that show up. And it'll also point towards different subsystems and components.
Okay. Now, then the system level one then would point to where we need to do other FMEAs. Now, some of the action items may be we need to do an experiment or we need to optimize or we need to get more information. But sometimes there's a lot of subsystem related issues and we need to prioritize those. So
yes,
it points to. Now, would you do that, the risk profile element discussion in conjunction with the system level FMEA, or would those be two separate activities?
Two separate activities. And if when I put in the show notes, an example of a preliminary risk assessment, mm-hmm. the first column is risk identified by system FMEA. I'm very comfortable with that as a pointer and as a criteria to help select lower level FMEAs. Absolutely. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I want to get that system FMEA done very early, and that'll do two things. It'll do more than two things. It'll show you where the integration and interface problems are, which will get missed by just doing lower level. It will point to lower level areas, which subsystems and components are highest risk based on severity, occurrence, and detection. Mm-hmm. And it will also identify single points of failure, which, in other words, where a component can bring down cause the mission to not succeed. So it has a lot of value, and I almost always recommend that. But I supplement it with preliminary risk assessment because I don't want to use the system FMEA as the only way to identify lower level problems. Like I say, preliminary risk assessment takes about an hour, and it's time well spent so you don't miss something important in an FMEA program.
But it also brings up the discussion is that, you know, other than the system level one, we may be in good shape. We may have ones and twos across the board, and there's nothing that's really a standout that's an issue.
Yes,
and so
that's right.
It starts with the assumption of, well, do we need to do an FMEA, and let's focus on the ones where it will provide the most value, and so I think that's where that short discussion then can be very, very valuable.
Yeah, and compare it to the alternative. And I'm going to say most people do FMEAs in a reactive format, which is somebody, like you say, the executive says, you know, we need to get an FMEA done here, and that sort of launches the project.
Right. Or I've seen it also where they have a failure, and because it's failure modes and effects analysis, they think that it's a failure analysis technique.
Yes.
You're like, come on.
Well, that's a good point, Fred, is we should outline, because we both agree on that, we should outline that where you don't want to do an FMEA usually is reacting to field problems.
Yeah, it's
not the right tool.
Well, it's one of the things that we talk about regularly is that it's a aid to making decisions up front. It's to help you understand the risks that you're facing as a team. It's to balance out resources or where you're going to focus. It helps you prioritize what you need to take action on. So when the primary question we're trying to address is, well, when and if should an FMEA occur? And my opinion is like voting in Chicago is early and often, right? Mm-hmm. It's you can do this on the concept phase of a product. You know, should we make this out of titanium or out of steel? Well, what are the issues we're facing there? And an FMEA can inform that decision and help you identify the risks that you're taking against the system level functionality and other areas you need to explore. So if you're facing a complex problem with lots of different things that can affect the outcome of your decisions, well, then an FMEA is informative for you and helps you solve that things. If you've already got a failure, well, there's other tools for that. If you have a previously done FMEA, it can help you understand what you were thinking when you designed it, but it's not going to tell you that this was a corrosion problem that caused this particular failure. You need to do the failure analysis for that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And there's a lot of topics that we could bring up about this, like when to do FMEAs. Also, is a timing topic. So you know you need to do an FMEA on the sprocket subassembly of a bicycle. When should it start? When should it finish? So there's that topic.
When's the deadline? Yeah.
When's the deadline? And just to not leave listeners hanging there, I like to have FMEA started as soon as you have a concept identified. Mm-hmm. And unless you're doing a concept FMEA, which then started as part of the concept identification process, and then complete the FMEA by the time you've frozen your design or frozen your manufacturing process. So there's a timing window when it makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And then you also have to decide what type of FMEA. You have concept, system, design, process, maintenance, software. There's different types of FMEAs that have to be part of the discussion. Mm-hmm. And all these are topics that will be in the FMEA series, the effective FMEA series of articles.
Yep.
So I'll take these different topics up one by one. And I'm very excited about that because for each topic, I'll include the content article, and then I'll do a problems and solutions to engage the people on that method of learning, and then questions and answers. So all these different subjects we're bringing up will be covered in more detail.
Well, that's perfect. It's and if you're interested in learning more about the FMEAs and the series that are of articles that Carl's putting out, is go over to Ascendo Reliability, ACCENDO Reliability, and you'll under the articles section, you'll see effective FMEAs as a series for that Carl's putting together. We'll add email sign up so that when a new article comes out, you'll be alerted that it's available, and we'll organize the material so that if you're just getting caught up with this, by the time this podcast comes out, we expect to have a number of articles there already, and also a way to get in touch with Carl so you can ask questions and take part in that. Also, we're interested in any feedback you got. If you like these discussions, if you're more of a listener than a reader, take a few minutes and let us know and what kinds of questions you have concerning FMEA or reliability in general. We'd love to hear from you as we continue to develop the shows. I think this episode, Carl, is, I think, number 233, 234, somewhere in that realm.
Very good.
And, the download count keeps going up. Apple is updating their treatment of podcasts, so we're going to get different and hopefully better metrics and measures of what we're doing. We're, the current measures is just basically the count of downloads, which I think we've just gone over 250,000 downloads, which is pretty cool. And we're getting feedback, though, from people that are saying, I love the show, I'm listening to it, I got it, and here's some questions to consider, and that's informed some of our topics. But it's those, that feedback, that direct comments back to us, that's, I think, the most useful. Download count is great, but I'd like to know if you listened to it and if it was useful, if you found something good in that or recovering something that was of value to you. That would be the most useful feedback for us. So with that, Carl, let's wrap it up, and please check out the Carl's series of articles called Effective FMEAs, and let us know what you think, and we would love to hear from you. So thanks, Carl, for bringing this up, just a quick outline of when to do an FMEAs and how to sort those out, and that's deciding in a more rigorous way, I think, is going to be very valuable. So appreciate you bringing that up today.
Sure. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.